Welcome back to CMDA Matters, a weekly podcast from the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. And I'm your host, Dr. Mike Chupp, the CEO of CMDA. And I mentioned that E because this week we're going to be focusing on the question about engagement and how does an authentic follower of Christ live for God in a post-Christian pluralistic culture which no longer really accepts or acknowledges the Judeo-Christian safety net. My guest today is Dr. Daryl Bach from Dallas Theological Seminary, and he is going to remind us that people are not the enemy. They are the goal. And I think this is so much easier to keep in mind for those of us who've been trained professionally to give healthcare services in America. I am much more comfortable engaging with people as patients and or those who love and support them than I am in engaging with people in the public square, especially when it comes to politics. You know, I was reading a challenging online article yesterday by a Presbyterian author named Richard Doster entitled Politics: Why Christians Must Be Involved. Doster says in that article, quote, "Christians, when rightly informed and motivated, change the character of political debate. They bring the moral standards of God's kingdom into the civic realm and thereby become agents of His common grace, of His provision for those who believe as well as those who don't. God cares about our spiritual lives, but He also cares about food, water, jobs, and housing. When God commands us to love our neighbors, He means to love them holistically. That means we'll care about laws that protect preborn children. We'll care about policies that defend marriages and families. If we love our neighbors, we'll naturally be concerned about the corrupting moral influences that creep into public schools." End quote. Well, let's go to my conversation with Dallas Theological Seminary professor and author, Dr. Daryl Bach, whose new book being released September 15th, entitled Cultural Intelligence, Living for God in a Diverse, Pluralistic World. It has come at a very crucial time for the church and CMDA. Well, I want to welcome to the program today the Executive Director of Cultural Engagement and Senior Research Professor of New Testament Studies at Dallas Theological Seminary, none other than Professor Dr. Daryl Bach. Welcome to the program today, Dr. Bach.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be with you, Mike.
Well, if you'll endure with me just a minute so our listeners can understand who I have with me, the privilege that it is, Dr. Bach has earned recognition as the Humboldt Scholar from Tübingen University in Germany. He's the author of over 40 books, including well-regarded commentaries on the books of Luke and Acts and studies of the historical Jesus. And he's told me in person that he loves to go to Israel and lead tours and talk about the historical Jesus within Palestine. A lot of work, you can guess from his title in cultural engagement, as a host of Dallas Theological Seminary's Table podcast. He was president of the Evangelical Theological Society in 2000-2001, is a consulting editor for Christianity Today, and serves on the boards of Wheaton College and Chosen People Ministries. He has put articles in lots of leading publications and certainly is an expert for the general media on New Testament issues. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and we had a chance back in February to talk about how his wife was so pleased that she wanted to give a big hug to Dan Brown because he wrote The Da Vinci Code, and Dr. Bach responded by writing the book Breaking the Da Vinci Code, and I think, Dr. Bach, you said that your wife got a new kitchen or something out of that book.
Every meal that I eat, we're grateful.
And just finishing, he's Elder Emeritus at Trinity Fellowship Church in Dallas and is a real sports enthusiast, loves even when he's traveling around the globe, though he hasn't done that for a few months because of COVID-19. He loves to watch his favorite teams, including the Astros, Dr. Bach.
That's right. I've got an Astros shirt on right now. Yep. So it's all all Houston, all the time.
He's been married for over 40 years to Sally and a proud father of two daughters, a son, and is also a grandfather. Well, welcome to the program. And you told me back in February that you were working on a book. And what motivated you to write a book entitled Cultural Intelligence at a Time Like This?
Well, I think that what we have done is we have actually exacerbated the cultural division in our country at a time in which the assignment of the church is actually to draw people from outside the church into the church by the way we engage. The Great Commission is a commission to go into the world and invite people into sacred space. And when all we do is counterattack, push back, and do so in a harsh tone, we undercut the core assignment that we have. I tell people that we fought the war in the wrong place. Mm. People are not the enemy. They're actually the goal. Mm-hmm. And when you realize that the spiritual battle that we're dealing with, which is real, is fought best when the distinctiveness of our faith is lived out, because the armor in Ephesians 6 that we're to wear that is our defense actually is our faith. It's things like righteousness, the gospel of peace, salvation, the word of God, etc. And it's not done in an in-your-face kind of way. It's done simply to show that there's a different way to live and a different way to engage. And we leave the responses to God and to the Spirit of God. Then the way in which we engage becomes very, very important. So people are not the enemy, they're the goal. And in thinking through the way in which there is a battle, we need to realize that spiritual battles require spiritual resources. And when we act and respond as the world does in kind, we actually reduce ourselves to another special interest group, and people won't be attracted to just another special interest group. There's got to be something special about our group in order to get their interest.
Since our summit in February, and the title had Right of Conscience, so obviously right off the bat we're talking about rights, but then came the pandemic and COVID-19, and you know, we've had some really good people working on some public policy statements, and the duty of conscience actually seems to be something that's more winsome, that healthcare professionals are drawn into. And no, our listeners are physicians and dentists and other healthcare professionals, Dr. Bach. And I don't think as a surgeon, I don't think I ever viewed my patient as my enemy, but someone I was trying to serve. So I think our listeners are going to welcome what you're trying to communicate to the American church.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I think of doctors, I mean, their job is to preserve life. I mean, if my understanding is, now I'm not a doctor, but my understanding is that the base of the, you know, Hippocratic Oath is this care for people, that's kind of one of the core values that you're talking about. Of course, one of the things that's happening that's hard here is that we have gone through a mammoth cultural shift in the last 50 years. The issues that become controversial are either related to pregnancy or to the end of life. Those are where the tensions oftentimes are the greatest.
Yes.
But the doctor spends the bulk of his life caring for people who are alive in the fullest sense of that term, as independent beings. And their heart and their concern, and what hopefully drove them into the profession to begin with, was their desire to serve and care for people and do things that are positive. And so the tonal aspect that lies at the base of physicians' care is really already laid in terms of what's normally going on. Of course, the pangs of conscience that come because we have debates about rights and body, and et cetera, in relationship to pregnancy and then how to die well on the other end, you know, some of those situations do inject some real ethical challenges. And then in the context of a secularism, sorry to be so long answering this.
That's okay.
In the context of a secularism, which has neutered the human worth to some degree by reducing humanity away from the idea it's made in the image of God and that there's something sacred about human life, to just basically a functional being, a functional creature that comes and goes, that difference has created the pressures on both ends of the lifespan that we see. And understanding the nature of that move and then how to talk about it in a tone that reflects legitimate issues on the one hand and concerns on the one hand, and yet at the same time understands where we are, is an important part about how to have that conversation.
many healthcare professionals that I've come across, especially since moving here to Bristol and taking on this role as CEO at CMDA, it's sometimes hard to convince Dr. Bach, physicians and dentists to get involved in public policy, because I think there is this perspective that we are fighting to win a battle and therefore there has to be confrontation. And physicians really don't feel very comfortable with that, honestly. And maybe a lot of Christians don't. But I think what your approach and that engagement, the wings, I think in your book you say there's two wings on the bird, truth and tone, and they're equal. If one's broken, the bird ain't going to fly.
That's exactly right. And the hard part is that our culture is a similar kind of bird. We've got Judeo-Christian roots on one wing, but we also have Enlightenment roots on the other. And the Enlightenment roots really drove the founding of our country to a significant degree. And those are now in tension in some of these ethical areas because the emphasis on human rights, personal choice, et cetera, those are Enlightenment values that have come to us that we've inherited just as much as we've inherited, you know, the ethical background of the Judeo-Christian backdrop, which, of course, is receding in the midst of our growing pluralism. Although the respect for life out of the religious sphere is not really reducing. It's the more secular aspects of that that produce challenges in that area. So you've got a national cultural bird that's also flying with one wing. So it's hard to do.
Well, I just finished reading with a good friend of mine a book entitled Confident Pluralism, actually a Christian law professor in St. Louis, John Inazu.
And yep, good book.
Oh, good. I'm glad you're familiar with it. I just as I was reading through it, there were lots of points that made me as an evangelical Christian uncomfortable. But I'm guessing anyone reading it from a secular naturalist perspective would not have been comfortable either with some of the concepts. But it seems to me that we are closer, those of us who try to follow Christ and behave like him, because of the concepts that Inazu points out of humility, that it's critical. And a lot of our secular colleagues, humility isn't a word that they put forward as being important. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah. What's interesting is if you go back even to the Greco-Roman roots of culture that we inherit here in the West, humility is not in the list of virtues, never comes up. It is a missing virtue. It's one that was supplied through Judeo-Christian backdrop. But the other thing that's going on here that is tricky is we live in a world, you know, when you're thinking theologically, you've got the world and then you've got the space that is made up of believers. We are described as exiles in a foreign land. We represent God on the earth. Our call is to invite people into sacred space. Mm-hmm. But we sometimes think that our job is to take over culture. That's never our assignment in the Bible. The assignment that we have in the Bible is to invite people into sacred space where they can get the equipment, namely the Spirit of God, in renewal that allows them to live in a different way. So the place we're supposed to be most distinctive is within our own communities. It doesn't mean that we don't lobby for or push for or try to develop the society in ways that might be healthy, but we also have to expect to lose. Jesus told his disciples, you know, you follow on my path, you're going to bear a cross. That implies rejection. And so that's come at some of the territory as well. So when we make winning the goal, particularly winning at all costs, the goal, and we forget that this is all in the hands of God, and the place where God is really at work is in his people, where his Spirit resides, and in the way in which they minister, in the way in which they are distinctive from the world, that's when we're the most effective. You know, the church grew the most when it had no political, social power.
Yes.
Or anything else like that. And it didn't try and rely on the state's power to do its business. It relied on the Spirit's power to do its business. And that's when it was the most effective.
And you mentioned, Dr. Bach, toward the end of your book, that how we as a church, the body of Christ, we conduct ourselves as the church while being consistent in shining forth a new way of life, that those are the critical aspects of engagement, especially, and I just want our listeners, our members of CMDA to hear this, how the church lives and functions as a community in service. And the key result area of community is one that's just becoming more and more evident to me that we need to promote among Christians in healthcare, because the way we love one another and our unity as we're serving within the hospital, in the clinics, in the community, that it's such a winsome example of body life.
Well, exactly. And when a patient feels your care, not just in the medical decisions that you make, but in the way you go about caring for them as a person, that just opens them up in all kinds of ways and speaks to the way in which the most basic ethical call that we have from the scripture, which is to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. And then with the little corollary, what makes Christianity distinctive is we don't just love those who love us, we love our enemies. When you put that all together and you display that, that crashes what I call a stereotype that people have. And they go, why are you treating me this way? The world doesn't treat me this way. You know, and that surprise can be part of what God uses to open someone up, because they won't listen to your challenge, which the gospel inevitably does to people, unless they know that you care.
Well, major, major point of your book, Dr. Bach, is that especially those of us who are boomers, and I'm a tail end in among those folks, is that, you know, it's true because it's in the Bible, is the way we approach a lot of conversations about ethical issues. And your challenge to us is to rework our thinking, a different way of thinking, that it's in the Bible. God inspired it to be there in Scripture because it is true. Can you sort of flesh that out for us in our daily lives, how we work that out in our culture today?
Yeah, the reason that's a challenge is because it keeps us from being lazy, you know. When I say it's true because it's in the Bible, you know, I sing a little hymn in the background, the Bible tells me so, and I'm done. I've given the imprimatur, and I'm done. I don't have to make any other kind of argument, et cetera. It's good enough for me. It should be good enough for you. But the problem in our culture is that the Bible, you know, isn't even for some people a book of wisdom to be respected. It's something less than that. It's an ancient book of tales that you can hardly put together, etc. So the second layer of discussion has to be, and this is actually the way I think inspiration was designed to work, is God tells us something in the Bible, not because it's in the Bible, but because it's true. And he's inspired it to reveal something to us about the nature of reality. And it's in the Bible because it reflects truth. And it's, even though it's true because it's in the Bible, more profoundly, it's in the Bible because it's true. And when you think about it that way, that means we have to give thought, and this is where the hard work comes in and prevents us from being lazy, is to ask the question, so why would God say this is the way it ought to work? What is it about life and flourishing life and abundant life that makes God say this is the way we ought to live and not do that? And when you ask that kind of a question, then you're able to think through the rationale and reasons why anyone on any standard, not necessarily having to have a theological backdrop, although in some cases it certainly would help, might be interested in pursuing the direction that the text is saying we should go.
You've got a whole chapter on difficult conversations in the public square, and I'm going to call these Professor Bach's Checklist of Key Questions. And you have six questions, and I certainly don't want to put you on the spot to remember all six in your book, but...
Yeah, because I couldn't do it.
I wrote them down, so they're here, but, you know, what about the issue has me hopeful? What about the issue has me concerned? How can we make it better on those issues where we're, the parts that we're concerned about? And what do I need to better understand or hear or learn about on the issue? Number five, am I hearing something from a different viewpoint that I should consider maybe making it part of my viewpoint? And then the last question, the one I want to just have you expand on a little bit, especially with an election coming up and with all kinds of political advertisements that my wife and I have been suffering through here in Eastern Tennessee, can I appreciate the complexity involved in the issue and not bow to oversimplifying a complex problem?
And Go ahead.
Well, I was going to give you an example of a commercial. I mean, we've been living in Eastern Tennessee now for 4 years, and I'm not going to mention any names or anything, but let's just say we're watching a commercial, and it's the usual, you know, lots of negative stuff about the other candidate. And the one candidate says, you should not vote for this individual because he supported gun control in our middle schools. gun control in our middle schools. And my wife looked at each other and said, don't we believe in gun control for middle schools? I mean, but because gun control is such a strong issue here in Tennessee, any sort of slight bit of complexity to say, yeah, I don't think kids should be toting guns into the middle school, immediately makes them a villain because they try to polarize the issue.
Yeah, and actually this utilizes one of the negatives. It's also in that chapter that I think is very, very important in thinking through where we are today. It's earlier in the chapter where I talk about the exorcist approach, which is you label something, play taps over it, and bury it so you don't have to discuss the details. Mm-hmm. The labels, everyone knows them, and that both sides play this card. The conservative, the liberal, the socialist, the Marxist, the fundamentalist, you know, just go through the list. Gun control is one of those. Human rights is another one. You know, we label something because what has happened is our culture has been reduced to 30-second sound bites. You can't work through an issue in a 30-second commercial. There's just no way to do it. And so what's the details behind that? Does the issue need some parsing? And what I mean by that is, I actually think that most of the issues that we face in the public square are the collision of values going in two directions that are running into each other. And the issue is, how do you balance these two things as opposed to picking one or the other in toto? And what our binary approach and what labeling does is reduce everything to a binary and an in toto conversation when most of our political discussions are actually discussions of nuance and balance. Mm-hmm. And when we lose that dimension of the political conversation, we polarize. Because as your wife reacted to the commercial, I don't think I want the people sitting by my child as a seventh grader or an eighth grader carrying a gun. You know, that doesn't make any sense. You know, and you got people on the other side here saying, well, I think it's a, you know, it's a national right. It's not a universal right. There are some countries that wouldn't allow it. But in our context and in our Constitution, we allow for the carrying of guns, but that also means, I think, a heightened responsibility for how to do that well.
Yes.
So you're into the conversation at that point. And if you take a view that says any law engaged in restricting the way in which we handle our guns is an attack on, you know, the Constitution, man, that certainly cuts off your possibilities. We don't handle cars that way. We don't say everyone get in a car and drive it any way they want. No, we've got to be aware of the other people on the road and what that means for the sense of public safety. You know, and we're in a similar discussion now on masks, which would be in an area that you would know a little more about. Mm-hmm. You know, do I wear a mask or not? Is it a matter of my having a freedom to do something or not do something? Well, at one level, yes. But the second question, the ethical question is, if wearing a mask prevents someone else from catching a disease I might be carrying, maybe I ought to consider that as worthy of consideration in balancing out my rights versus the well-being of someone else.
I've been tempted, Dr. Bach, to put the text from the, or just the passage of Scripture, love one another as I have loved you, on my mask, because we all understand that the mask is not about protecting me, it's about protecting you. And so it seems,
exactly,
and that's why we put some guidelines on our coronavirus webpage, Dr. Bach, that we really feel this is a demonstration of love for one another, as well as respect for government authorities who have responsibility for protecting the communities where we are. But it is certainly an issue that should be about health care, but it has been distorted.
And think about it from a Christian point of view, which, of course, is another dimension of our conversation, and that is from a Christian point of view, it shouldn't even be debatable. I'm going to be strong on this one. It shouldn't even be debatable that we should stop and consider what the impact of the nature of our action is on someone else. And, you know, we can debate, we can get into the debates about the science and whether there's really a danger or not. And I think the answer to that question is just look at the death numbers.
Yes.
The death numbers tell you something's going on that we need to pay attention to. There's a lot of people who have died who, if we had been more careful, may not have died.
Including some great leaders, I'm afraid, around the world within the CMDA ranks, including our international body. Just got a message this past week about a leader from Armenia, a very strong elderly Christian leader in Armenia in the healthcare realm, and just a great loss for us. So it's, and you know, globalization is something you refer to quite frequently in your new book. So I've been following stories of loss and pain back in my old home in Kenya, and it's finally reaching there in the developing world and ramping up. And a physician who said he faced the worst, a Kenyan physician who faced the worst week of his life with fever, joint pains, and a headache. And I'm like, okay, I don't really understand people who feel, from the conservative Christian side, who say this isn't real, because it is.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing, is that what the politicization risk doing is actually taking us to a place in which the defense of our own rights gets in the way of actually caring about other people. And that's just so counter to the core Christian values of the way we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves, and we're supposed to be considerate to others and that kind of thing. And so it shows a potential distortion. And I think it's one of the great tragedies of our cultural situation, that this issue has become so politicized that people can't think about what the basic ethical responsibilities might be. And the idea of sacrificing a little bit to make that happen, which is another very important core Christian value, has almost gone out the door for some people.
Talk to our listeners about how you envision healthcare professionals who follow Christ, as well as theologians, working together to make a dent and influence in our culture today.
We've had a strong emphasis on faith and work at the center, which means we're trying to help pastors and leaders equip people in the public square with what it is in the context of their vocation that they can do to reflect their Christian commitments and what that looks like, and to use that as a witness. After all, that's where most adults spend the most of their productive time, is in the workspace. So what does that look like? So we came to you and you came to us and we said, doctors and pastors sometimes seem like they live in two completely different worlds. The only time they connect is, you know, for 1 to 3 hours on a Sunday morning, and then they each do their own thing. But is there a way they can mutually benefit one another, the theologians with helping the doctors wrestle through the ethical questions that they have to deal with, and doctors making pastors aware of what those challenges are so that theologians can speak more intelligently into those spaces and with more awareness of the kinds of things that people are grappling with? Because what's interesting is that the doctor's dilemma becomes the patient's dilemma simultaneously.
Yes.
So you're dealing with families as well as with the doctors. And so we want to figure out how to do that and how to be pastoral in that. And so we've formed an alliance, I guess, or made a networking commitment to one another to produce events on occasion where theology and medicine overlap, where we talk about theology and science, which oftentimes is an area of conflict as opposed to an area where there is cooperation. And in the process of pursuing those goals, hopefully serve the church, doctors, dentists, and nurses, and also people in the church in general, and pastors in particular, as they lead, you know, into one segment of society that obviously is very important, because people tend to care about their health.
Well, we've run out of time, Dr. Bach, and I want to thank you, and I want to encourage our listeners to check out the webinar that's going to be on October 1st with Dr. Bach hosting it, and Dr. Stephen Koh, from a previous guest of mine on CMDA Matters, as well as our Vice President for Bioethics and Public Policy, Dr. Jeff Barrows, and a conversation about the church and science, especially now with COVID-19, church reopening guidelines, vaccination development, and a lot of the issues involved with what we're facing today, the challenges. Thanks, Dr. Bach, for taking time out of your early fall as you're preparing for the school fall semester, for joining us today on CMDA Matters.
Well, it's my absolute pleasure, Mike, and we look forward to many more conversations between us, and hopefully for those who are listening, I appreciate them taking the time to listen to us.
Well, I think that Dr. Bach's book, Cultural Intelligence, Living for God in a Diverse, Pluralistic World, can help prepare us all to engage more effectively in our post-Christian society. That book is already available on Amazon for a pre-order and is being released September 15th, so you can go online and purchase it yourself. If the topic of cultural engagement interests you, we have several books that you can find on our website, including a book by Oz Guinness entitled Impossible People. He was featured on our CMDA Matters podcast earlier this year, and this book is about remaining strong in the faith despite outward pressure to conform to a secular society. Another book by a former guest on this podcast, Tim Gagelein, who's vice president at Focus on the Family, is entitled American Restoration. Tim makes a very good case that restoring Judeo-Christian values to the United States is not only possible, but he feels it is likely if Christians are willing to engage in their communities as little platoons on mission. Both of those books, by Oz and by Tim, are available on our website at cmda.org/store or purchase toll-free, call 888-230-2637, and one of our staff will get one or both of these books in the mail to you right away. As I mentioned at the end of the interview, CMDA will be partnering with Dr. Bach and Dallas Theological Seminary on October 1st to bring you a webinar entitled The Church and Science in a COVID World. You can go to cmda.org/DTSwebinar to sign up today. You'll just need to put in a username and password, and you'll have access to sign up on our CMDA Learning Center platform. Well, we have been saying today that a Christian healthcare voice in the public square matters. As Christians, we can have a godly influence in shaping decisions made in our country's legislative processes. Our CMDA advocacy team, also known as the A-Team, continues to work with our AAME, which stands for American Academy of Medical Ethics, state directors and CMDA members to address bills being proposed now in the states of California, Montana, and New Hampshire. In California, we have been steadfast in prayer and heavily advocating in opposition to California Assembly Bill 2218, which promotes the Transgender Wellness and Equity Fund. This bill in California specifies that all grants and services be provided by a transgender-led, quote, organizations and hospitals, healthcare clinics, and other medical providers, end quote. We believe this could incentivize the active recruitment of patients, even minors, for medical treatments, from hormonal therapies to surgeries for gender dysphoria that can cause irreversible damage and medicalize adolescents for their lifetimes. Unfortunately, this bill was passed by the California Senate and will be sent to California Governor Gavin Newsom for his expected signature. California AAME State Director Dr. James Grisolia actively encouraged public opposition recently to the bill through an interview with the Christian Broadcasting Network. In the state of Montana, we are opposing state ballot initiative I-190 coming up in November, which is seeking to legalize recreational marijuana. We hope to prevent Montana from becoming the 12th state, along with the District of Columbia, where marijuana has been legalized. Education is key if we're to keep recreational marijuana from being legalized in Montana and other states. In addition to the CMDA position statement on recreational marijuana, we are providing additional resources to help our AAME state directors and members effectively advocate and educate in the public square on this issue. In New Hampshire, we are coordinating with CMDA past president and New Hampshire AAME state director, Dr. Richard Johnson, to oppose a physician-assisted suicide bill. We have an annual meeting coming up at CMDA on September 22nd. We will host our annual AAME State Directors Meeting to introduce the new members of our public policy advocacy team, as well as the new state directors. We're looking forward to discussing new ways that we can assist these state directors in their advocacy efforts. You know, if you are interested in helping your state healthcare public policy team, please let us know by emailing us at the address communications@cmda.org, and we'll get you connected. Well, as I close, Dr. Bach has become a good friend, and he has challenged me personally to consider not only the words I use, but the manner and tone that I use to communicate them.
reminds me of Peter's words in his first letter to believers in what is now Turkey about using gentleness and respect. And the Apostle Paul, he told believers in Corinth in 2 Corinthians 10, starting with verse 2, "I beg you that when I come, I may not have to be as bold as I expect to be towards some people who think that we live by the standards of this world. For though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient unto Christ." People are not the enemy. They are the goal. And Paul even called one group of converts his crown. And we have been equipped with a powerful gospel message that brings hope and healing for our world. Knowing how to effectively engage culture on behalf of Christ, it matters to you, I know. And so it matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next week, God willing.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.